Hello, and welcome to the Great British Fuck Off. I'm your host, Savran Drake, and joining me this week are contestants Fuzz Wolf and Shiva.
Hello, girls.
I'm going to make a haggis cake.
What are you going to be making?
A lot of shit.
A lot of shit. Well,
it's considered a pudding.
The great chieftain
of the pudding race.
All right, and this week's challenge is going to be footy chips. They're chips with a gym sock. Go for it. You have 30 minutes. All right, kids. Let's get this shit show on the road. Welcome to Southpaw's episode 450, the 2020 finale. Wait, no, 2019 finale of the show. And boy, howdy, what a disappointing kind of day it's been. It's been a rough little bit in terms of, like, your home stuff, Shiva. She's finally back. She's still on the show, guys, I promise. See, yeah. She's right here.
Let's see, illness, because we had a cold for, like, go through the house for, like, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Then I went out to my folks in Virginia. That was two more Thursdays between all the traveling. And then last week, Siam got neck surgery, and that was last Thursday. So it's been a week of recovering. Yeah, it's been a busy month and change for me.
He changed his fursona to a giraffe and had to go in and have more neck added.
Yeah, Siamese cat giraffe.
Eh, you know, why not?
Yeah.
How about the Furby tar? Have you seen that?
No.
I saw that today and the person tweeting was like, I shouldn't be laughing so much while painting. But they made a Furby tar. So it's the bottom half of a centaur, but the top half, it's just a Furby.
Oh, I need to see this.
I'll have to dig it up for you. But today has been a very discourse-filled kind of day. We have show notes. We have stories that are good. Like, I had some good stuff to talk about. And there's video games going on right now. While we record, I'm having to not look at Twitter because the Game Awards, the basically, hey, watch this commercial for 90 minutes with Geoff Keighley and his Dorito Pope-ness. Shiva just gave me a look when I said Dorito Pope. There's this old image when they were doing, like, Halo 4 or whatever, and it's him sitting in a chair looking dead-eyed and had a table on his either side, one that had Doritos, one that had Mountain Dew. And so for a long time, people would just, like, they found this one really good semi-conical Dorito that looked like a mitre. Not a mitre. Yeah, like
the Pope hat. The Pope hat.
And so they would, like, put that on his head, and he was the Dorito Pope. Anyways, video games are going on. I've had a productive week. MFF was actually a big success, it seems.
Yeah.
It went really well. Fuzz can talk about that a little bit. And we can talk a little bit about that other podcast that's doing a series that, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, well, then of course there's, you know, the rest of reality where the UK fucking biffed it and, well,
what'd they do?
They voted for the Tories, the Conservatives, and therefore everything that they've been trying to stave off is going to happen instead. They will have their hard Brexit. They will have their dismantling of the NHS and the border in Northern Ireland. You know, let's have ourselves the Irish reunification of 2024, as predicted by Star Trek, The Next Generation. Though, probably sooner than that, let's have our Scottish independence, Welsh independence, and England can just sink into the sea. Mm. You know, let the eels reclaim the entirety of Britain. They deserve it, after all the times they've been eaten by the people of London. So, let's get going on some good shit, right, to start us off, and then we'll kind of get into the more depressing shit, and then I have some funny stuff at the very end. And I'm sorry I'm cursing, Mom, I know you're going to get on me about this one. It's just been a bad day. So, I'm going to tell you guys, I had myself a week last week. So, MFF's coming up, and to preface this, I haven't been able to really do much in the way of audiobooks for a while, like between family stuff, neighbors being loud, and just the inertia of not having done it for a while. I just didn't do it, right? So I had been sitting on a book that I owed an author for a while, and then said author was coming into town after MFF, and I was like, okay, that gives me 8 days to get files for him. Or I'm going to be, or I can't see him. I cannot face him. I would be too embarrassed to actually say hello to him.
He will take your lungs.
He will steal my lungs, yes. He will say, like, this, if you're not using them for audiobooks, you don't get to have them at all. Which is not true, but still, it was a funny thought. But I managed to bust my ass, guys, and I recorded a 9-hour, 18-minute long, in its current form, audiobook in a week.
Yep.
That's a lot of recording. That's a lot of talking, because when I say 9 hours and 18 minutes, that's how long it takes when it's finished and I've said things correctly and haven't screwed up a sentence 4 or 5 times because its wording was slightly awkward or coughed or Adam barked at a random air molecule. You know, my upstairs neighbors have changed since I last recorded anything. I previously had 2 upstairs chihuahuas who, you know, if a leaf moved, they would bark, and they would be, they had the little gate where they could come in and out of the house. They had like a little doggy door on the patio, so they could go in and out anytime they goddamn wanted, and they would be barking at random times during the day all the time, and it sucked. But they're not my neighbors upstairs anymore. They got a house, they moved out. Upstairs neighbors, you know, it's a young couple. Like, the wife vacuums every day, but that doesn't take too long. And so I busted out an entire audiobook, most of an audiobook, in a week solid. I gave the files, and I'll be starting on my next one.
Yay! Good.
But I was like, I got that spark, I got that manic energy back, where I'm like, I gotta get this done, and I got it done, and I'm like, all right, cool. Fuzz, quick, give me the next files, quick.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I can do that.
I thought it was coming down with a cold, but it was just allergies, so...
Yeah, and my thought was that, like, he suddenly talked constantly for an entire week, and you might have ratted up your throat or
something. Yeah, because, I mean, you're really not supposed to do that. Like,
yeah.
I can do four or five hours a day talking, doing that before my voice gets a little too much, and I'm like, I'm going to stop and be quiet for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's nice and fine, but you only can do so much in a day.
Yeah.
Before you have to stop. And I don't know what the pros do. Like, I don't know how long their recording sessions are, but I just had, like, a self-imposed goal for the days and got it done. Mm-hmm.
There's also some things you can do to help.
You gargle cum.
Guaifenesin, lots of water.
Mm-hmm. I think it's honey lemon water helps. There's look up tricks that singers use to help condition and keep their throat so that they can practice.
Yeah.
But I do know, I've forgotten so many. I used to know a bunch for when I sang back in chorus.
So there's one of those, like, Granny Smith apples help cut down on, like, the mucus production of your mouth so you get less snappy, less mouth noise.
Avoid anything dairy-based.
Yeah. Well, I do that anyway.
I know, but...
No peanut butter.
The other thing you could do is you could stick a vibrator in the back of your throat and massage your vocal cords.
Yeah, and just get the Hitachi Magic Wand. It's like...
Yeah.
Vibrate that uvula until it falls off. You know, clean my teeth through vibration. Vibrate all the everything off my teeth.
And then you you have to go see your dentist because you're like, I accidentally vibrated out my teeth.
Oh, I vibrated out my fillings. Please redo them.
Here they are.
I mean, they're just the little resin ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I finally got used to them or stopped noticing them. It took a little while. It
happens after a while.
It does, but that you just notice them so much when they're first in there because everything feels weird.
Yeah, but I was very pleased. I get to keep my lungs, and I'll be continuing on to my next project. And that was my yay for the week. I felt very satisfied, and, you know, I was able to have a nice dinner and a nice lunch and not feel guilty.
Yes.
Though I do have a fun anecdote.
Oh.
So yesterday at lunch, remember the pizza incident?
Yes. We went to Pizzarella.
It was you, Fuzz, me, Tieran, Kyle Gold, and
Dark End.
And we literally doubled the lunch crowd at Pizzarella. And the poor little shop dude, I keep forgetting his name, but he's like the employee during the day.
Yeah.
And he's there every day. I can just say, yo, just give me my usual, and they know what I mean. But they were super busy. He was the only person up front. He was running drinks. He was getting phone orders, all the takeout stuff.
Yeah.
And everybody else had gotten their food but me. And he came up and was like, hey, so I was trying to be helpful in the kitchen and was going to try to slice your pizza. So there's a new one in the oven and I'll be bringing it to you in about 5 minutes. And I was like, is it still a pizza? Unfortunately, no. I'll bring you some garlic bread. Okay.
And we were all like, oh my God, what did it become?
The most likely thing is that he dropped it while transferring it from, like, the cutting board to the tray. Yeah. But it was that I was just like, you tried to cut it up and it's no longer a pizza? What happened?
accidentally someone was like, Satan,
it doesn't have to
pizza.
Be pretty, just bring me the pizza, I'm gonna eat it all eventually. But no, he like dropped it or whatever.
No, he can keep that pizza.
You know, I got some free garlic bread out of it.
Yeah,
so you know, whatever, and it was nice conversation. But yeah, that's the good stuff, that's the fun stuff that I had. Because unfortunately, yeah, this week's a bit rough in terms of news, and like today has been a real bummer too in terms of like the UK news and all the people in the UK being very, very sad for very obvious reasons.
Well, they did vote them in.
I mean, clearly not all of them.
But that's like, you know, it's the 51% of people in that one Welsh town voting for Brexit and then everybody losing their jobs at the steel plant.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not just like, yeah, the 51%, but everybody's affected.
Yeah.
It's just a pain in the ass, and it sucks for all the people out there that had, you know, high hopes that maybe they would not screw the pooch, that they wouldn't like completely ruin themselves.
Oh, they screwed the pooch. They proper fucked it.
It's just a bummer.
Yep. And on that note, good night.
Yes. So on that note, good night, and arm the Irish Republican Army.
Oh, God.
Troubles 2. No.
Oof.
No.
Like, that's legit. Like, we really don't need that.
No, we don't. But it's...
But
it's,
they're... I mean, they're like... The Tories are fucking setting it all up to happen again.
Yeah, it's like part of the Good Friday Agreement. There's no hard border in Northern Ireland, but this Brexit requires a hard border and a customs union, and that's like You know, so maybe Northern Ireland will get the clue and be like, actually, we're just going to be regular Ireland now.
Yeah.
And you guys can eat a bag of dicks, and Scotland's going to be like, hey, we're taking ourselves and all our sheep, so good luck.
We have more than sheep. We have Highland cows as well.
And goats.
And goats.
And
oil.
And fjords.
And do we have fjords?
I don't know. They got mountains.
Yeah. We got the islands.
Ah, yes. Ugh.
Ugh.
They got big swords. Very big swords.
Ah, yes. Claymores. And gamers to toss.
We'll
just toss them all in a row and make a wall between England and Scotland.
Well, I'm just going to reuse Hadrian's Wall.
Yeah.
You know, we just got to fix... Except Hadrian's Wall is like 6 feet tall, wasn't it? Like, it wasn't very impressive, but it was just long. It was just like, hey, don't cross this. This is our fence.
Yeah. I don't know much about it, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, Fuzz, why don't you?
Because I was 8 years old when we moved to the States.
Okay. Well, there's that. Chiva, you don't have a ring, do you? The ring cameras?
Yes, we do.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Have you seen any of the stuff about the rings being hacked and people accessing your cameras?
No, but all they'd see is my street.
Oh, my ring got hacked once, and that's why I don't bought them.
Oh.
This is a bad entry. No.
Hey, man, the ring has to remain intact, because if it's broken, you die in 7 days.
No, but I saw the... No, I did see an article about basically how Ring is catering to police departments to encourage use in the areas, yada yada, but not anything... I mean, I'm not surprised that they're being hacked, because pretty much any of the internet, you know, Internet of Things can and has been hacked at some point or another.
The thing is, like, people have been using Ring cameras in their house as well for, like, baby monitors and whatnot. So there was an article on Vice.com talking about how, like, specifically focusing on inside, it was called Inside the Podcast, it hacks Ring cameras owners live on air. And basically they were using the, like, have I been pwned password lists of people that have been hacked and stuff, trying passwords, trying logins to access their Ring camera, and then like using the speaker on the Ring device to say things, to like threaten the families. There was a particular story in here that like they were trying to get a $400,000 Bitcoin bounty, or they were going to continue like screaming at them, and the woman just took the batteries out.
Yeah.
You can't access it if it's turned off, but also telling people, like, having the cameras talk to their children, be like, hey, this is Santa, you know, kill your parents and I'll bring you presents and stuff like that. The Ring cameras, for one, like, yeah, all right, you can see your front door and whatever, but the information that's put out there basically lets, you can, with that information, people can map areas out. Like, all right, these Ring cameras are in here and here, so we can get an idea of what houses have rings and what don't. But also, like, that information, yeah, you said, the cops getting video from it and whatnot, and, like, them being able to request video from any surrounding Ring units, also in case, in the, you know, incidents of a crime, and I say, potato fingers, like, for an incident they want. So it's like, who knows? Like, your neighbor's Ring camera might end up in evidence in the pile of video that the police have because, you know, someone two blocks over had their door kicked in, but yours is just, like, the pizza delivery guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One of those things that they pushed very heavily, like, they pushed it on Amazon.com, they pushed it to everybody, oh, it'll give you peace of mind, you can see who's at your door, there's ads on ESPN, there's ads all the dang time, but anytime you have an Internet of Things thing, more often than not, those things are going to be vulnerable to being hacked. Like, for all of our tech stuff that we have at the house, Panther does not own a single IoT device. Like, nothing we have...
Well, he works in internet security, yeah, so...
He's
yeah.
in IT, so he knows better than to have anything IoT.
Right, yeah.
Like, he can connect to his home server via... I'm not sure, but it's not an IoT server. We don't have IoT light bulbs or a Nest, because he's like, I would love to have a Nest.
Let's see. Nest, light bulbs, Alexa. Stop.
Oh, sorry. We said her name and she was listening, because they are always listening.
Yeah.
Though it was interesting, like, there was some news article about Alexas being narcs, and there was a thing where the cops got data from an Alexa in a murder case, but the information, like, it's like anything is stored locally and then it's sent out to be processed, so your Alexa can still listen, but if it's not connected to the internet, it can't process what it's asking for. So
someone
if you're
asks
in a house,
her in court, who committed the murder? Playing Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Suede.
So, like, if you are being murdered in a house, you should be screaming her name constantly as you die, just in case that they can catch the audio of you being murdered.
Do you remember the one time when she randomly started playing disco in here?
Yeah.
Well, apparently, the light on my desk back there is desk off, or desk on, and that has at least three times in the back office says, now playing Disco Inferno from Shiva's Spotify. Three times, not counting the one in here.
So I think the point of this little mention of IoT devices and Ring specifically, be very careful when you have that stuff in your house, because, you know, it's not just that, okay, you're giving all your data to the megacorps. I mean, yeah, you're doing that all day, every day. But also,
I mean,
just like
cell phones.
Random vulnerabilities of just like having hackers access to your cameras that you have outside your house, but possibly inside your house, and having a microphone where they can like scream obscenities at you on the air for the lulls of their internet dudes. And it's funny because after the article on Vice went up, the forum that was hosting this like went down for maintenance for a couple days, and then when it came back, mysteriously all the mention of this Ring hacking was mysteriously deleted. Mysteriously. But members of the Discord, like, on Thursday, some members of the Discord appear to be panicking, changing their usernames, and some are saying they're quitting because mainstream media outlets are now covering the Ring hacking. I mean, obviously, you should be real careful. Like, yeah, alright, you can totally have one of these things, but use, like, a password manager that has, like, 21 character strings that generates it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't reuse the same password anywhere. Like, two-factor authentication your stuff. I need to be like, there we go, I'll just get Swift on Security to come to Fiesta and do a panel on, like, personal cybersecurity. There we go. They're not a furry, they say, but they're lying. Be like, hey, Swift on Security, you want to come to the con and do a panel series on personal cybersecurity? They'd be like, yeah, sure, whatever. But anyways, yeah, IoT stuff is always sketch. Be careful with that stuff. But also, you know, use your head when it comes to passwords, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we should all know better, but it's also really not necessarily people, like, of our cohort, necessarily. I mean, it is people of our age, because I say we're not young anymore. We're late 30s, early 40s. So it is people our age that don't know, that weren't necessarily raised on computers, I guess, that aren't quite so savvy. And, you know, the same people that fall for Facebook scams are the ones that are also getting done by this. But
yeah,
listeners of this show are probably a bit smarter than that. Hopefully. You're all very good people. Pat, pat. But yeah. Mind your passwords. Check yourself on haveibeenpwned.com. Have I been PWND? And you can input your input an email address, and it'll be like, hey, yes, you have been pwned this many times. So be careful when using passwords online that are similar to these other websites that have had data breaches, because it's always something. There's always some new website getting their stuff breached.
Don't let your Ring get breached, kids.
Yeah. make sure that you're exercising your ring, that you do take the proper precautions, do your Kegels.
Speaking of which, did you see that headline?
Which one?
Oh my God, about a woman in Florida squirted vaginal fluid at a cop as a defense measure?
Ah, yes.
She's not a skunk, you don't spray.
I threw that into the politics chat, and what was the line that I put? I gotta pull it up because it's been a little bit. I had a very busy evening in the politics chat, as you would expect.
Yeah, because there's an election going
on. Hegelian dialectics. Yes. That's a very good episode title. Barking Point should steal it. What else? What should we go to next? Because there's a lot of topics. This is a random thing that you sent to the chat, Fuzz, where it's like, the Dorsai will not be doing security at Anthrocon 2020. And like briefly, everyone's like, oh my God, what does that mean? It means Anthrocon's gotten too big for the Dorsai to service, essentially.
That's what one person said.
Yeah, but also, you were saying...
I wasn't. I was like, that's what one person says, but yeah, I mean,
they have like an official statement.
It's not an official statement. They're not someone in the know. I was like, that's just like your opinion, man.
Doesn't Dorsai do much larger ones than Anthrocon?
They do MAGFest, one of the tweets said.
So I probably just spoke out of my ass there because I'm just like, well, the Dorsai have been doing Anthrocon forever.
17 years.
Also, like, Anthrocon's pretty big and they can afford to possibly get their own group or whatever. I don't know. There's been many years where people are like, oh, the Dorsai have been dicks, but I haven't had any problem with them in the last several years. So
I had an encounter with one who was kind of a dick, but all the other encounters I've had with them or working with them have been pretty smooth. The way that we end up working with them the most is that they're the ones that coordinate all the dealers loading in and out on the dock. Like, the union folks are only there to like load and unload the vehicles themselves, but as far as like, well, organizing like the cars lining up and waving the traffic back and forth, like the vehicles backing up into the bay and stuff like that, that's always been the door side of security staff that's handled all that. So AC needs to either, I guess, have people on the dealer's room staff do that, which means they probably have to beef up their dealer's room staff, or they'll need to train a new security group to be able to handle that, because it's a particular thing that's beyond the normal scope of security, really. It's more like traffic control. So that's like that's an area in my wheelhouse that I'll see a difference. So, you know, hopefully AC 2020 goes smoothly there. I mean, they do have several months to find a solution for that. So yeah, I just dropped that in there because it was furry news. It's, you know, one of the largest conventions. I figured it was relevant. But the Dorsai posted it to their website. I don't know if Anthrocon has made any kind of official statement on it. I haven't looked into that. But yeah, they're just, and the Dorsai linked to PDF on their website, it basically doesn't say any more than what the little snippet linking to the thing said, that after 17 years, they're no longer working with Anthrocon, and there's no reason given, there's no big long statement or anything, it's just like a paragraph. So there's no real public information out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really news in as much like, wow, these people have been doing this forever.
But yeah, it's just it's a little shake up in one of our long-standing conventions.
Yeah, I mean, it was at least they're doing it like 6 months, 7 months in advance, so it's not that big a deal, I don't think.
Yeah,
it'll be a different set of goons running security this year. That's life.
Yeah.
Though, actually, I do want to say we can talk MFF briefly because we're on the FurryCon thing.
Yes,
the con went really well this year. Like, they raised $110,000, something like that, for charity, and then somebody said they were going to double it.
Yeah, they had an anonymous, apparently wealthy donor, so MFF's total charity is now $220,000 for this year.
They had 11,000 furries there this year.
Yep.
And everybody seemed to have had a fairly good time.
We had our best MFF ever. It wasn't our best convention overall ever is in terms of sales, but it was our best MFF, and MFF is right up there with AC and TFF as being like our best cons to sell at.
Yeah.
But like, you know, we had a bunch of new releases. I had like at least a dozen new releases. Big headliner was Kyle's new Devin Lee book, Titles. And we damn near sold out of that. You know, we only had like a couple of hardcovers left. And like, I knew that it was going to sell well. So I had already ordered a restock from the printer. And that arrived like the Monday and Tuesday after the con. And then we had Kyle fly out here. So poor Kyle was probably getting pretty tired because he had had a thing. He had Thanksgiving, and he'd had, like, an other travel thing, and then he'd gone to MFF, and then he'd had, like, a, like, he was, like, home for a day, and then he got on a plane and came out here, and he was here from, like, Tuesday evening through early Thursday morning. Yeah. So he was basically here for Wednesday, and it was really nice, because, like, we had dinner out on Tuesday tonight, we had lunch and dinner together on Wednesday. And he signed all of the reason we did this was there were some questions people were asking about, hey, the previous out of position books. So Wolf had arranged to have the pre-orders autographed. And we talked about that. And it was like, okay, yeah, the logistics of doing it at the con are going to be kind of hairy because we don't know how many we would have left if we had enough to meet the pre-order demand or not. So like, it'd be better if I just get a supply of books at home. And then have him come out here and sign them. So he signed all the stock I had on hand of Titles, and also several of the orders ordered other books by him. Like a lot of folks picked up like Tie Game as well as Titles because it was like the spinoff book in the Out of Position series. Mm-hmm. And other folks picked up other things. We also had several copies of his Collations books sold. So he signed those too. And so, yeah, now I've got like, I've got a kitchen table literally piled with books. You can go on the 4Planet Twitter account and you can see where I've retweeted Kyle. Kyle took some pictures before and after as he was signing them. Fez, our badger, was supervising him. I don't know if you saw that picture, Savard. She'll see Shiva in a minute. But
Which one?
The one of Fez supervising Kyle.
Oh, right, yeah. Books.
Yeah.
That was a big old pile of books, too.
Yep.
I mean, he's written a lot of things, but it's just like mainly just titles.
Yep.
But he signed them all, and he's off. Like, I think I saw you tweet where he's going to be, I'm home for 12 days, because then it's FC.
Well, he's local to FC, so that's okay.
Okay, so but he said like he was home for 12 days, so maybe
he usually goes
else.
Out of town for New Year.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
FC is what, third week of January, maybe?
It's like, yeah, it's like second or third week. It's Martin Luther King week, holiday weekend is when FC happens. And right now, our printer is on holiday mode because their demand for printing shoots way up because Christmas, you know, mm-hmm. people buying lots of books. So it's, I think they're on like a 13 or 14 day production schedule right now and then like another 5 days to ship to us. So Tyrion needs to do the post-con inventory this weekend and then we need to place a FC restock order like ASAP.
Yeah.
Because a lot of our new stuff we either sold out of or we sold most of, and we do not have the stock levels to do another convention. So,
especially not a middling size one like FC.
Yeah.
How big is that? Like 6,000 or so? I say middling and it's only 6,000.
It's a fair size, but I think I wanted to say it was like 3,500 or 4,000. I can look it up.
I mean,
right
it's
quick.
Comparable to Fiesta, I think, nowadays.
Yeah, I think it's a little bigger than Fiesta, but not by much. I'm not sure. I wanted to say it was like the fourth or fifth largest con, something like that. But let me not talk out of my ass.
Yeah,
let
so me just wait for this. While you look that up, let me tell something else.
It is the sixth largest con. Fiesta is actually larger now. Oh. Fiesta had 4,844 last year. And FC had 3,850.
Okay, wow.
So it's a little under 4,000.
Man, we're going to cross 5,000 this year for mm-hmm. Fiesta. Holy uh-huh. shit.
Yep. Let's and see. Then we'll be like, so like BLFC is at 5,692 and FWA is at 5,645.
those two are going to swap around a little bit, I'm sure, but we won't cross either one of those this year, I hope.
Those two cons are...
I say I hope because that's just a lot of growth in 1 year.
Yeah. Those two cons for the second year in a row are 1 week apart.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So we got into BLFC as dealers for the first time. So we're going to be dealing at BLFC.
And FWA?
FWA, I'm still waiting to hear back from.
Okay. Wow, that'll be a...
So it might end up being something like Tieran goes to BLFC and I go to FWA. Something like that.
Well, you'll keep me in the loop, I'm sure.
Yeah, because like one person doing that, two cons in a row, like we had to do that in a previous year when we had four cons in a row. And some people ended up doubling up like that. That was when it was like, it was Worldcon, Denver, Mephit, and another one. And it was, they were all in a row, basically. Yeah. And it was just like, oh my God.
So the other thing about MFF that was good is that, well, the fascists didn't show up, at least the exterior fascists. There were still some furries in there that had themselves a bad old time. But in preparation for this, the podcast people over at the Worst Year Ever podcast also went to it. The people that do Some More News and Even More News on YouTube and Behind the Bastards.
Yep.
So very leftist, very left people. And they were there to just sort of chronicle what's going on.
Yeah.
And they found that they had a really good time, that the furries are pretty darn good at keeping out the fash, and that the culture that furries have is actually really positive, and
yeah.
I wish I could hug more people like that. Wow.
And they were really impressed by how wholesome we were.
Yeah. And they talked to Dia. Like, they've put out, it's like a 54-minute preview of their podcast.
And it's just like their, these are our first impressions kind of things.
Yeah.
But they're going to do, like, two more episodes that are, like, interviews with people at the con and background information. But they're like, it turned out that, like, we thought this would be simpler, but it's actually, like, really complex. So we're going to stretch it into two episodes. And apparently it's going to be a series where they investigate different subcultures and talk to them and see, like, how are these subcultures dealing with, like, how are they keeping out the fash? How are they dealing with the politics and of our current era? I almost said 2019. I don't know why. It's still 2016.
It's 2016 plus three.
Right, yeah.
Next year's 2016.
It's like
four.
How there's like Final Fantasy 11 2.
Yeah.
This is 2016-3.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or if, you know, if you're using like Star Trek, you know, it'd be like
Stardate.
A, B, C, D, or the NCC number.
Oh. So just as like an overview, it's like 2020 isn't going to be fun for anybody, left, right, or center. What many call the most important election of our lifetime is going to be an exhausting, ugly, angry, and probably at least a little racist. Listen, as Robert, Katie, and Cody try to keep level heads covering the election while traveling the country, from the Iowa caucus to gun shows and anti-vaccine conventions, finding out what, quote, real America really wants and things during the worst year ever. And that's why they went to the furry con, because Milo put himself on the map with that, and then the little fucker took a bunch of furries' money and didn't show. So, I mean, ha ha.
So he didn't actually.
No, he wasn't there.
But also, I'm very glad that nobody did show, because, well, it would have been ugly.
Well, because MFF don't need that shit.
Exactly.
It's an 11,000-person furry con. They got enough on their fucking plate.
Like, and they opened their discussion talking about the chlorine gas terrorist attack in
2014. Yeah.
And how, like, they used that as sort of a framing device, saying, like, yeah, when this came to our attention, it was because Milo Yannabanana was being a shit.
Uh-huh.
And the con was like, no. And he said he's going to show up anyway. And then he didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't mention that he didn't, but thankfully he didn't. Because, you know, he sucked some money out of the furry fandom, found out we weren't going to take his shit, and then he went off to have some other
meltdown. We should also note the money that he sucked out of the furry fandom came from the alt furries.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not exactly feeling sorry for them.
Oh, no. Like
they got grifted by a guy who's clearly a known grifter.
What? I never thought the leopard would steal my wallet, said furry who's Snipsona fucking... I can't believe some fash-ass furry gave him a fursona. But then again, they're bad people. Anyways, but MFF was good.
Yeah.
A lot of people had a good time, raised a bunch of money, and I think they handled the potential situation real well. And I think if there is any fallout that'll happen from that, we'll find out about it much later. And like they mentioned that they interviewed Dio.
Yeah.
And she was part of that, so... when that comes out, maybe there'll be some information about what they had to do to ensure that these people didn't show up. Yeah,
because I believe she's on...
She's on charity staff.
She's on charity staff, yeah. So, but I'm sure they would have looped her into part of that conversation. Yeah. The other thing I was going to say is that, like, so I wasn't, like, paying super close attention to my regular Twitter that weekend. So, I mean, I didn't see anything negative, really, about MFF, so that's good. But I was paying a lot of attention to the For Planet Twitter because I had Zia take photos of our booth, and I tweeted those. And I was, like, retweeting several of our authors who were coming by the table or had new releases and people that were doing book signings at our table. And it was honestly just really, really nice to see, like, a lot of people, like, retweeting our booth pictures and speaking very positively about, oh, it's so cool, there's all these books in the fandom, and, you know, how much the furry literature scene has grown and all that. And
yeah,
there's people promoting their books and their comics, and it made me feel pretty good. I was like, holy shit, we pulled it off again. We got all this new shit ready, and it was at the con, and I think a lot of it was just relief that I was feeling, where it's like, oh my god, Tira and I got all this stuff laid out and off to the printer, and it worked again. Oh my god, how do we keep doing this? Like, I'm not qualified to run this company.
You've only been doing it for more than a decade now, Fuzz.
I know,
but you'll be a professional someday.
But I still feel like Rory with his little flaily paws going, I don't know what I'm doing. Ah!
Well, speaking of paws, we're gonna that's gonna be our shifting point for the next topic.
Okay.
So you remember the CG Lion King?
Yeah.
And the CG Sonic the Hedgehog redesign.
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
The VFX studio that did that went under. Wait, no, they didn't go under.
They didn't go under. They just closed their Vancouver studio that had crunched for months.
Yes.
On this redesign.
Lion King and the Sonic redesign. Yeah.
So MPC Vancouver has shut down. At one point, it employed over 800 workers in Vancouver. Currently, it was smaller. But they were told of the shutdown this morning. As of today, December 11th, 2019, is when this article is posted.
Okay.
And they're owned by Technicolor and will continue to operate studios in Montreal, Paris, Adelaide, L.A., and Toronto. MPC's various studios have been collectively responsible for films like The Lion King, The Jungle Book, Justice League, Blade Runner 2049, X-Men, Prometheus, Dumbo, and Guardians of the Galaxy. And there was a post on Reddit, We've all put in extreme hours wrapping two infamous projects in the last couple months. We've done multiple weeks without a day off, regular 17-plus hour shifts to the point that most of us are seriously sleep-deprived and are suffering still. We've worked really fucking hard to get this work out the door for MPC, and I'm genuinely ashamed that they are happier prioritizing their profit margins and tax incentives or the insane talent and commitment of hundreds of dedicated VFX artists in Vancouver. I honestly feel insulted. I've given MPC my all. In return, they gave me the finger. Good luck to all the other insanely talented artists that MPC currently employs in other locations, because the second another location becomes more, quote, attractive, you could be the next one on the chopping block. Basically, they've been expanding their market, and apparently they just recently expanded their facility in Bangalore, India. Huh. So, guess what? Our animation jobs in the industry are going to India now, because of course they are. Why, we haven't outsourced everything yet, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Soon enough, we're going to have fucking kiosks at McDonald's, and you're going to push the button, and the voice is going to be Indian. Or some, you know, it's gonna not going to have actual physical workers. Machines will make the burgers, and the person answering it will be in another country.
There were rumors that had already happened at some McDonald's, and I have no idea if that's just internet conspiracy theories or what. But
yeah. It is just a bummer, because these are the guys that fixed Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
And made the Lion King look all weirdly uncanny.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, and it's also just that, like, they made a movie that Disney made, like, probably $1 billion on, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And the more I read into it, it's that, like, Technicolor, the company that owns them, is having trouble. They're not incredibly profitable. And a lot of the reason is that the studios are demanding, like so much of them on, like, a very thin budget. So that's why you've got, like, one team doing, like, mandatory overtime, you know, working 11 days straight without a break. That might be wrong. It might have been
longer. We have to make Sonic's taint look exactly correct.
Right, yeah. And, like, sometimes working 3 or 4 17-hour days in a row. And if you want to leave after 8 hours, you have to get permission from your manager. And if you don't want to come in on the weekend, you have to have a really, really good reason or you get, like, written up.
So, y'all know that Disney and such has been outsourcing 2D animation overseas for decades now, right?
Yeah, but we're talking about a specific studio, MPC, in Vancouver, the ones that recently did Lion King.
And... I know, I'm just saying that this is nothing new. They've been outsourcing that kind of stuff for forever.
In this particular case, the Vancouver office closed while they've been staffing up overseas. American animation hasn't been American animation for an extremely long period of time. Like, they were doing Korean and Japanese animation in the late 80s, starting with, like, Gummy Bears. Gummy Bears was done by TMS, the very highly regarded Japanese animation studio, back in the late 80s.
It would be, and even, like, some of the, like, movies, they used to do keyframes, and then they would outsource all the animators to do all the filler frames between the keyframes.
Like, a lot of animation is finished out in... the Philippines now. South Korea.
Malaysia. Yeah. South Korea.
Basically, where's the lowest that they can pay people? Disney used to operate their own animation studios in, like, Australia and France, but those closed down back in the early 90s as well. But yeah, I mean, this is just basically an expensive area. They just shut it down, shift all the work over to a much less expensive area, while the people that have busted their ass in the crunch get shafted completely.
And that's kind of, it's like, I was thinking the other day about the whole worry about immigrants coming in, taking your jobs. It's like, they're shipping your jobs overseas.
Like, I ain't got to ship, it's like, we're not bringing in the immigrants to your job, we're shipping your job to the immigrants. Well, they're not immigrants because they live there, right?
Yeah. You know? It's like, yeah, worry about the ones that come here and take your jobs, I guess. But
if they can come in and take your job, what
but
are
they've
you
already
doing, right?
Shipped so many of our jobs elsewhere. You know, I mean, tech support for all low-level stuff is almost universally overseas. There's very few of the low-level stuff left here in the U.S. Customer service is all overseas. You know, good luck, Godspeed, because, yeah.
I mean, Vancouver is just an insanely overpriced area because a lot of foreign real estate speculation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Chinese nationals buying houses there for money parking. And so, like, that area is insanely overvalued, so it's very, very expensive. Like, my sister lives in that region, and it's incredibly pricey for everything. Like, a gallon of milk is, like, $5.
It's like the Seattle of Canada, right?
Yeah.
And that's where Kadistra moved from, and she was in that same situation. It is insanely expensive to live there.
Like, my sister loves it, and she's real happy with her husband. She's glad she ain't living in here in the U.S., but she's, like, having a bit of sticker shock in terms of, like, what she's doing. But, you know, she's doing well. She's got her green card up there, and she's on track for citizenship, and she got a job and everything. She's doing all right, which I'm really glad.
I'm going to be shipping her and her husband some cookies from Cookie Getting.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, cool.
But going back to the Lion King fuzz, internationally...
No maple, please. We've got more than enough of that, eh?
Lion King internationally made $1.6 billion, and a domestic of 543, international of 1.1. So,
they were just too uncanny valley for me.
Yeah, it's like, Nala can't do the look. When they tumble down the hill, it just looks weird.
It's
like, that. I don't want to fuck that lion.
Oh, man. So Kyle introduced me to this little this series on YouTube. It's I think it's called Pitch Sessions. He listens to the show, so I'm sure he's going to, like, IM me and tell me I'm wrong about that. But basically, this guy plays both parts. And he plays the part of a guy pitching a script idea to him, and the other character is the producer. And you can kind of tell, like, how he's criticizing aspects of the film in how he does it. And, like, you remember that scene with Simba and Nala? And it's like, heck yeah, I remember that scene. It's like, okay, we're going to do that scene, and it's going to be during the day. And he's like, what? He's like, yeah, but what about the word tonight in the song? It's like, oh, they'll never notice. It's really good. The ones we watched, we did that one, and we watched Ready Player One. The Ready Player One is pretty brutal, but they're really funny. So you should look that up on the YouTubes.
So in good fandom news, there's actually two little bits here. One, Dana Simpson, author, creator of Ozzie and Millie and also Phoebe and Her Unicorn,
yep,
got an interview in Writing Routines. She got a profile by them, and it's a fairly, it's not a super long interview, but it's always nice to see somebody in our community. I mean, she's not really in the furry community, though her stuff was definitely started furry, but, you know, she's a proper syndicated-ass comic illustrator.
Like, yeah.
The Phoebe and Her Unicorn is in the newspapers.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually in actual newspapers, which is wild. It's in her bio. It says she's, like, a syndicated cartoonist, which indicates she's syndicated somewhere.
And this is so, like, people were reading Ozzie and Millie in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. I was reading Ozzie and Millie then.
Yeah.
I was like one of my go-tos. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. And I posted another article link from Rolling Stone.
Yeah. It's like, why are so many Gen Z's kids becoming furries?
Yeah, I saw that.
And it's like, well, because they can. Did you read the article? Because I'm looking at it. It's like,
I did.
Furries on TikTok.
No, I read the whole article.
All right. So elucidate.
It's very positive. It starts out to talk to this mother, has a 9-year-old daughter who discovered the furry fandom when she was 8. And she's like really painfully shy and, you know, was not interacting with other kids and stuff like that. And then she discovered the furries and she made a character. It's like a zebra colored unicorn, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom is like, you know, when she puts on the head, she fucking running around and she's interacting and she's really enjoying it. And apparently, so you guys have heard of TikTok, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a new Vine thing.
Yeah, and I've enjoyed some of the TikToks I've seen. They're really funny. Like, they're these short little videos that are really hilarious, but I'm not, like, heavily into, like, there's a whole TikTok community. Kind of like
this is where, like, we get to be like, wow, what are the kids into these days?
This is literally, no, this is exactly that, because apparently TikTok is really big with the Gen Z generation.
Yeah.
And like the way people used to be into Vine or, you know, like the YouTubers and stuff like that. I wonder if
Derek from Care has gotten on TikTok yet.
I don't know.
Because he had a whole bunch of Vines.
Yeah, he'd actually probably do quite well there. But apparently there's a lot of younger furries that have like quite large TikTok followings. And that's how like a lot of the younger generation are discovering furry and interacting with people from the community. So this mother and daughter live about an hour from Chicago, so they went to MFF. So this is like a brand new article, like they interviewed them at MFF. And there was a panel there, like a TikTok furries meetup, basically. And like the girl was like so excited, she got to meet some of like the big TikTok furries that she'd been following and stuff like that. You know, and it also goes on and it talks to some other furries that are like kind of in their early 20s, you know. Like I said, the Gen Z and millennial kind of era. And a lot of it is just about had the freedom of expression and being able to find yourself and like how the creativity of creating a persona and like sort of being able to sort of explore who you are in a safe environment is really appealing to people. And they also mentioned our large LGBT population.
Yeah, I'm at that part of the article.
The fandom is a very safe space for non-hetero sexualities and, you know, gender flexibility and things like that. And that's another aspect of younger people that are trying to figure themselves out, and the fandom is like a safe place to do that.
And then just a paragraph down, it also like how certain people with anxiety, one mentions her, Jen, for instance, says her daughter Emily has been diagnosed with anxiety, as has a 17-year-old dressed as Wyatt, an Australian kettle dog TikTok micro-influencer at the convention. Throughout this whole con, people recognized me and wanted to hug me, and it just warms my heart because it feels like people care about me and I don't have to worry about what I'm doing. I'm just a dog, Wyatt says. Most, and the parents are like, yeah, this is kind of cool. That's nice.
Yeah, and there was another con that said that, I think it was Anthrocon, actually. They talked to a couple of folks from the AC staff, and they were saying how they noticed an uptick in the percentage of minors that were registering for the con. So this is something to keep in mind that, like, yeah, we're a growing community and there's like this, and it was always like young people come in and then some of them are kind of like, oh, it's just a passing thing, and they move on. And then some of them stick around, but that is now extending younger and younger. It's not like just 16 and 18 year olds coming into the fandom.
I mean, we do kind of legit need to think about having a more widespread, like, kids programming track within the community.
Right.
And that just requires staffing up and having the people to do it.
And I just want to add to that that I would be in favor of that as an addition to our existing program, not taking something away,
yeah,
but adding more and expanding more of our reach, basically.
We see these fursuits at these cons, and there's like 8, 10, 12-year-olds kids with their own suits that they made themselves, and I'm like, that looks pretty good. And you made this yourself? Holy crap. Good job, kiddo. And like at the very end, it's like the mom says, being in the fandom and being involved in like the fursuiting stuff has helped her become who she's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So, like, in this article, like, the parents see it as a positive thing. They see the fandom as a positive place for their kids that are, you know, exploring themselves and having a good time. So it's always nice to have that kind of coverage.
And it's also, it's a fairly well-informed article. Like, it actually does touch on, like, earlier media, like Entourage and CSI stereotyping us in particular ways, and how Furry had this, like, really negative and sleazy reputation for a while.
Yeah, like they still, people still bring up fucking CSI, and that was 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That episode could legally drive.
Yeah. And they, you know, and they kind of, and they counter that, and they've been like, no, it's like so much more than that. And the only thing that furries have in common is they have some sort of affinity or liking of anthropomorphic animals. And that is basically where it stops. Whether you're into the raves, whether you're into fursuits, whether you're into books and art, you know, it's just so fucking diverse. And, you know, like the quote here says, you'll find other artists, dancers, filmmakers who are drawn to it for different reasons. My only criticism of the artist, my only criticism of the article is there's one that said, yet most furries say that those who sexualize cartoon animals represents only a slither of the community.
Slither?
Slither, yeah. Sliver. Like, oh, it's a ton. No one's horny for furry art. It's a tiny slither.
That's not true.
Like, I am fine with furry expanding and being more open and having stuff for kids and stuff for adults. But I'm not fine with this, like, downplaying of, oh, no. You know, we all keep our genitals, like, contained in their original saran wrap. And, you know, it's like the old Billy Connolly joke. I don't even touch it when I'm taking a piss. I use those tong things you get in cake shops. And it's like running completely in the opposite direction and being, we're entirely squeaky clean and we're not like that 1% of people that think that have naughty art. I don't think that's good either. Like, we don't need to have that sort of puritanical dismissal of sexuality. Because, and somebody replied to, like, my tweet about that. They're like, you know, if I was interviewed, I'd just reply that, like, furries are as interested in sex as anyone at an anime con or a comic con or a gaming con. And that's basically true. And honestly, the only difference, like, the only thing on that side that I think sets the fandom apart is that we're just as interested in sex as any other human community. We're just not ashamed of it. We don't tend to hide it in the back room, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's also part of the reason why the openness to queer sexualities and identities is there, is because we haven't stigmatized the sexuality part of our art form. So, like, yeah, totally be open to youthful people coming in and having all ages safe content, but also don't downplay.
Don't strip away what's already there.
Yeah, like, and frankly, don't lie. I mean, adult art is a slither of the fandom. That's a flat out lie. I mean, you know, I'd like to be like 50-50, but it's more of our stuff is adult currently, and I'd like to get some more stuff there. I'm glad I've got a few YA titles on the table now, and that would be a good area to expand also. But I'm absolutely not advocating that we go completely squeaky clean, because, you know, we don't really want to change the nature of what the fandom is that much. So, thoughts? Well, I have opinions on this, obviously.
It's also in our own self-interest to not be squeaky clean, because that keeps corporations out. because we're a bunch of horny weirdos, that means that we're not necessarily palatable to the larger marketing world, and that means that we're less likely to be fully co-opted by capital. Mm-hmm. If we're a bunch of horny weirdos in animal suits, like if we were just weirdos in animal suits, they could co-opt us a lot easier. But because we're horny weirdos, that makes it a little bit harder. So what you guys need to keep doing is making all the weird porn you want, and
also make wholesome content too.
Yeah, make your wholesome content, but also be like, you can't pretend, you can't be sex negative in this fandom.
No.
Like, there are people that are sex negative in this fandom, but they're just loud, annoying, you know, people that make weird proclamations that, like, pet play is weird, and, you know, you can't make horny Pokemon.
Yeah, I'll get into that in a second, but, like, I also wanted to say, obviously, I have no problem with artists and writers that just don't want to do adult material.
Yeah,
because it doesn't personally interest them and they want to be a safer work artist. That's fine. You know, it's when people start going, ooh, gross, those adult furry artists are degenerates.
I hate to say, but look at what kind of the tone AC set for many years.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
I mean, they were out, they had a very sanitized public image for a very long time.
Well, and it's funny because the artist, the article acknowledges this, that, like, you know, when you walk into the dealer's room and you see the raunchy stuff that is available for sale, it's like, yeah, it's right there. Yeah.
The covers are suggestive, but there's not bits hanging out.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And, like, you had that exchange with Kadath about the guy, old dude being weird to Kaylee about teacher's conference.
Not just one. Kaylee was selling her adult comics that we publish at her table at FurFest, and she had not one but four old men berate her for selling adult material. And we were discussing back and forth, and like, it was, Kadath was like, I think it's because she's a woman selling porn. And
they would be really surprised at the number of women that drop porn in our community.
I know. And I'm like, I wonder if they gave that kind of shit to every woman that was selling porn there. Because, you know, a lot of our adult artists are women.
Yeah.
And it's just so weird. And, you know, they would pick up, like, so she shared the cover at Teachers Conference on Twitter. And it's sort of like, yeah, there's a girl sitting on top of her guy. Her legs are spread and her panties are showing. And it's sort of like, yeah, it's a teacher's it's adult. And they're talking about, oh, well, we need to a developmental program for your child or something.
Yeah,
and that's
like,
the
he's
adult
been really
conversation.
Acting out. How's
having.
His home life? It's just really hot. I need to air out my groin.
You know? You know, it's like, you cannot look at the cover of that comic and be like, oh, this is completely clean, wholesome fun.
Yeah, it's like, what's going on in this thread? I mean, most of your books are pretty much what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Look at the cover of Ineas Ampikos' art books, or Scappo's art books, or...
Oh, well, Kadath's comics.
Like, yeah.
Punished Puzzle is fairly... obvious what's going to happen.
Or
Night Moves. Yeah.
Well, that's the one where Fuzz is sitting, you know, years between Nightshade's legs, and he's looking scared.
Yeah.
What's going to happen here? Oh, you've been very bad. Spank you and send you to your room. That's totally what's going to happen there.
Right.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I'm really annoyed that just, like, old men giving a young woman artist shit over her content. It's just... I don't know their motivations. I wasn't there, but from the outside, it just seems like such patriarchal
bullshit. It's just
bullshit.
Weird misogyny. Like, why would you care the sex of the person making this stuff? You know, she's a very talented artist and does a lot of really good stuff. She does, like, the Harem Artist and a bunch of other, like, her style is both very diverse in its body typing and creature type, but also it's just ornateness. And she's done a number of comics, which are really good, too. So it's just weird to have random old men coming up and talk to her to be like, how dare you use your talents for pornography?
Yeah. I'm sure, I know at least another artist who, or I've seen several artists post things where, like, family or random people have told them that they're wasting their talent or so forth by drawing the smut, you know? And it's like, fuck you, you know? I didn't ask you or you to say what I use my talents for, you know?
Yeah.
It's just weird. Nobody fucking asked you, man. Yeah,
exactly. Like, this, our nation's puritanical brain poisoning is just, it's never going away.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always going to be somebody that's going to have a weird sex negative thing no matter where they go. It's a goddamn horseshoe, right? You know, everybody talks about horseshoe theory.
Yeah.
Like, the further left and further right, the closer they are to meeting in the middle. And that's not true in a lot of cases, but in terms of sex negativity, that does seem to be the case.
Mm.
Where it's like, all porn is ultra exploitative and bad and harmful to the consumer, versus porn is bad because it makes God sad. And it's still like, but they kind of meet in the middle because it's like, pornography is terrible and should not exist.
Yeah, that's just America.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're the horniest people on the planet, but we gotta like hide it behind the covers and pretend it doesn't exist. It's this weird national hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Porn's good, y'all. It's fun. Just, you know, keep it, you know, obviously don't be like showing it around where kids are gonna see it, but other than that, whatever, man. Like,
what was the stat, like, if you jerk off at least once a week, you reduce your prostate cancer risk by 40%?
Well, good news is I'm never getting prostate cancer, if that's the case. and then, of course, there's, like, the weird discourse sometimes where it's like, if you draw X, you're this. If you draw Y, you're this. And this is inherently problematic and should not be done. And it's like these 16-year-olds making proclamations as if they know shit about shit.
Right.
It's like, shut the fuck up, child.
So I have a question for you. So I saw on my Twitter timeline people complaining about people complaining about people drawing horny Pokemon. But I don't know what the origin of this current issue was, because people have been horny for Pokemon for decades. Why is it suddenly a problem?
This particular brain poison bit of neo-Puritanism came out of some, like, 16-year-old Tumblr refugee who declared that if you draw Pokemon at all, you're a zoophile.
Jesus, okay.
And if you, so it's like, not only if you draw Pokemon having sex, you're a zoophile, but if you draw Pokemon in general in an enticing way, you're probably a pedophile because your art is enticing children to look at porn. And also, in separate but equally dumb shit things, pet play is also somehow zoophilia because you're pretending to be a dog or a horse. And this, is, of course, is insane and completely nonsensical, but because there are people on Twitter whose existence exists to make hot takes, this got around and people were like, what? And certain people pointed out that this is just basically burned fur discourse 6.0, because it just keeps coming back from years and years, where it's like this weird random sex negativity around like things. And obviously people were pushing back about it. It's like, you know, whatever, it's Pokemon, they ain't real, you know, hope you're not horny for any for your fursona because dogs exist in real life, you know.
Right.
It's like, check yourself before you wreck yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, there are things like, hey, don't draw kids.
The other thing is that being horny for Pokemon is not limited to the furry community.
Oh, goodness, no.
You know, Rule 34 exists, and this is just a thing that horny Pokemon are just on the internet.
I mean, the questionable shit's when you get to, like, the trainers, because they're all, like, very young in a lot of illustrations, so, like, that's kind of, that's the sketchy bits.
But yeah, like, I don't want to see like Ash and Misty fucking or anything.
Yeah, being
like
horny
that.
For your Lucario. That's been since Lucario was announced, right?
Right. You know,
when people were horny for Charizard day one, and that was 1997.
I'm always really amused whenever Nintendo announces new Pokemon, because it's like, how furry bait are they going to be?
Oh man,
how
all three
horny
of the starters,
are people going to be for them?
All three of the starters for this one. Are, for the most recent Pokemon game, are all furry bait.
Yeah.
You've got
I know about Score Bunny. I've seen pictures.
So you've got
of
the
them.
Sporty Twink Bunny. Uh-huh. You've got the Goth Twink Water Lizard. And you got the big, beefy Muscle Monkey. So, like, they've got a furry flavor for pretty much everybody.
I'm sorry, I'm chuckling. I was thinking of that that old comic. It's like, cuddling with your Pikachu, cute. Cuddling with your Machamp, weird.
Well, I mean, there's the images where it's like, Litten. It's like the little cat, fire cat, and then it grows up and it's a bigger cat, and then it's like its final evolution is the fire-fighting big buff fire cat whose name I can't remember, and it's hugging her.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Or the guy's like blushy while being hugged by his giant fire cat. Yeah, I mean, that's been going on forever. There's like toxtricity or whatever, which is like a poison electric type, and it's like a big, lanky lizard thing that people are like, ooh, I like this one. And there's...
those lizard ones that you see.
The Salazzle, yeah. That's from last gen. I'm trying to think of the ones that are people are horny for from this gen. But yeah, like there's a good variety of Pokemon. People are like, oh, I like this.
So I want to read a tweet by hashtag per
yes.
Twitter. It's like, every Pokemon is fuckable or none of them are. Stick your dick in a ghost's teapot. Get tied by an electrically charged dog knot. Make a Ditto turn into you and choke yourself. It's all the same shit.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the ghost's teapot?
There is a... ghost Pokemon that's a two-stage Pokemon in Sword and Shield. The one, it's a ghost that has possessed a teacup, with teacup and saucer, and then the evolved form is a teapot. It's a ghost that is inhabiting a teapot, and the ghost, like, sends itself out to slap you with its ghost hand, but otherwise it's just like a little floating teapot.
So it's Chip and Mrs. Potts, but they're haunted?
Yeah, they're ghosts.
Okay.
They died in the castle... You know, because, I mean, that was in, like, what, the 1500s or whatever, so immortal or not, you know, actually when they became human again, they lost their immortality, so, right. You know, they just became ghosts after the fact.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
that's just how it happens. I wouldn't say it's a weird bit of discourse, because I never saw it directly. My discourse shields are very strong.
Yeah.
I only see them unless I decide to engage with them myself. So it's like making snippy comments and being like, if you have ever drawn a fictional creature that's not kin smooth and has genitalia, you cancel yourself. Satan is on his way. You know, whatever, y'all.
One of the terms they use on Behind the Bastards is Cancelvania. Like, Robert's going to do something fucked up and he's going to have to move to Cancelvania. And they're like, who's your roommate this week, Robert? Like, oh, my roommate Cancelvania is Harvey Weinstein. Oh no.
Yeah, it was a weird notification that an icon I hadn't seen, but it was like an App Store ad?
Oh, was it a blue alert?
So, like, shifting off the porn topic, because I think we pretty much said, y'all need, like, kids, slow your roll. Pokemon is going to be horny forever. People in pup hoods are not fucking zoophiles. What the fuck? That's a weird-ass statement to make. Pretending to be a horse does not make you a horse, okay?
What? That's as dumb as the one statement that, like, not being a vegan makes you a zoophile.
Yeah, like, whatever, y'all. Chill out. God, I just, my train of thought just got, just exploded.
Well, let's do my one cool thing, which is about a month old now.
Okay.
I just sent pictures of it.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah. Did you share those into the fan chat?
Yeah, fan chat, but not to our listeners. I haven't been on the podcast.
Oh, since. Yes.
I can post it to the Patreon or whatever if you want.
Yeah, so, but crop it a little for my face.
Yeah, I'll put like a Chikat face. I'll just get like your fursona, cut the head off, and put your fursona over you.
Mm-hmm. So at TFF this year, I also took over kind of overseeing the general charity department when our current charity lead left. And I'm not leading it directly. I'm just kind of oversight to make sure that shit happens. We've got a new lead who's doing all the driving. I'm just making sure he has all the pieces he needs to do his job. So he lives up in Minnesota. He came down. He'd seen Care from like pictures. He was a big fan, but he hadn't actually been out to the property. So I contacted Heidi out at Care, told him, you know, the lead was changing this year. Well, let's meet up, brainstorm some ideas, and let me introduce you to our new guy, because he's going to be the one making you the money. We go out there, and first thing that they do is like, well, go ahead. I'll have somebody take him on the tour, give him, you know, a tool around the property, meet the kitties, and we'll come back inside and we'll brainstorm. So we go and we take a tour and come back, and lo and behold, it's feeding day, and their daughter comes in kind of hiding their arm and hand. And it's like, what did, and we're like, oh no, no, no. Did you hurt yourself? Are you okay? He's like, no, I was helping like feed the kitties, which means cutting up animals. And she didn't want to squick us because she was a mess. And it's like, no, it's fine. We're familiar. And then Derek comes walking up looking like he's murdered somebody. Like, sup. Like, he's in like shorts, galoshes, t-shirt, and he is up to his elbows in whatever animal is going to the kitties blood. He's spattered and he's just like, sup. It's like, hi, Derek. So we go inside And she's like, well, come give us a hand a second. We got to give the cubs their breakfast. So I'm thinking, just going to go in there and talk, because to this point in time, they're a very good rescue. Once the cats are adults, they never have human interaction. You don't go into a pen. They are not safe. But all big cats have to be hand-reared, because if mom teaches them they're utterly unhuman safe. Like a lion hand raised by a human may not, you know, immediately kill you, but even a cub raised by a previously human-ish, very ish safe lion will be utterly feral and is a very dangerous animal. So all big cats are hand raised if they're any potential ever getting exposed to a human. As in not living out in the wild. So Care had taken in two tiger cubs from, I was told it was a rescue, I think it's up in Oklahoma, where basically the gal who runs it unexpectedly got pregnant. And so they had to basically downsize to a more manageable portion. And then one of her tigers had not one or two kittens, had four cubs. And that's a lot of baby to have to hand wrangle when you're pregnant. So Care originally got two cubs, and then the placement for the other two cubs fell through, so Care just took all four. So they had two of them for like a week, 2 weeks, something like that. And then they got the other two. So they weren't apart that long, but there was definitely a staggered. I'm not sure how old they... I'm going to estimate that they were probably about 40 pounds each. They grow very quickly. I think that they were only about 12 weeks old, but... I mean, they're still 40 pounds. But no, we walk in there. They open up the cage because it's basically, think of like a screened-in, very well-screened-in porch. Half of it is divided by basically industrial dog cage. And that section has an exit to an outside play area. And the other half has like human couches. And it's more human-friendly, whereas you can't let... They would destroy it if they had regular access to it. So Derek went in with two of the babies, a bottle in each hand. And then I'm thinking I'm just going to spectate while Heidi feeds the other two. No, she hands one to me, sits one to me down. And next thing I know, I've got a 40-pound tiger cub, very interested in breakfast, in my lap. And then Charity Lee Bittergrim has got handed the other bottle. And the other cub was just like, yeah, you're lunch only. And all they cared about was that bottle. And once they had the bottle, they were back over to the other cage where the other two were still eating because they wanted that bottle too, like kittens do. And all my time in helping out with Care, it's been 12, 13, 08 to now, years now, never thought I would have any interaction with any of the animals. And I certainly would never ask because that's just kind of rude. I mean, inappropriate because I don't want to be pushy because... Mm-hmm. Where you give them money, so let me pet a tiger.
Right.
Or even a cub. Like, I would never ask to do that, but it was just like, okay. And here's an experience of a lifetime of now I'm feeding a tiger. So we came up with a bunch of lovely things for this year for ideas of stuff to do. And it should be kind of amazing. So yeah.
It's very cool.
That was my one cool thing that is almost a month old, but oh my god, it's still kind of, like, jaw-dropping that happened. So.
You got a chance to play with the tiger cubs, and by play, I mean feed them.
And then watched as they wandered around, tried to eat the Christmas tree, fell off the back of the couch. And then I have another picture in the chat of Derek's in the cage with feeding two of the babies, and they have a German Shepherd. He's about half the age of Bo. He's about 85 pounds, but he is kind of their playmate because he can keep up with their running. He's got more fur to protect them. So he kind of teaches them to, hey, that's not cool. Teaches them how to play. He can actually play with them because one thing that was stressed over and over through the years is when they're raising cubs, they never they don't play with them because playing, the larger they get, the more rough the play gets. The more rough the play gets, it can turn into... It goes from play to murder, death, kill really quickly. And even at their size, I mean, strong. Oh my God. If you've ever pet a pit bull and you know, like, the layers of muscle that are just, like, piled onto those dogs, it was like that. Those tiny little cubs had just incredible amounts of power packed in their frame for their age and their size. So I've got a whole new respect for what's going on with, like, the adult versions. Because if they are that strong when they are that small, holy crap. No, you would not stand a chance at all against any big cat. But Bubbles, the dog, you know, keeps up with them, at least for now. They'll rapidly outpace him. And he can kind of teach them if they're playing too rough, get away quickly if they are. And I've got a picture of that after Bittergrims got done with lunch and mine was still finishing his bottle, Bittergrims hopped down, went to sit on the other side of the gating, and was sitting on top of Bubbles, looking at Derek in there, still feeding those two. And they're like, hey, give me that. And he's a really cute Sheppy. So they also have a Great Pyrenees puppy. And I use this puppy because he's like 10 months old.
So he's only like 80 pounds?
125.
God.
At 8 or like 10 months old. And he's still got a lot more to go. But yeah, so that was my interesting thing of the month.
I have to share something cool that I just retweeted. So as you guys may be aware, the ruling political party in Scotland is the SNP, which is the party that is pushing for another Scottish referendum for Scotland to be an independent nation. So here's the SNP is indicated in yellow on this map. So based on the exit poll predictions, there's Scotland.
It's entirely SNP?
Yes. Huh. Not a single Tory seat, apparently.
Well, that's good. I mean, Scottish independence is now, like, on the fucking table, that's for sure.
Oh, for fuck sure, yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, we're going to be done with you wankers. We'll go be...
Can they just vote themselves out, or I don't know how
they have to, quote-unquote, seek permission. But somebody was like, maybe they can just do what the Americans did 243 years ago.
It's happened before. It'll happen again.
Yep.
Guess what, you wankers? We're our own country. We're going to join the EU. And then now we're Northern Ireland. We're on track for the Star Trek, you know, Ireland unification of 2024.
And they all go, fuck you to England.
And now we just need the Welsh to be like, we're going to become East Ireland, okay?
Just go back to being Wales.
And then, you know, they leave England on its own. They let it just kind of sit and fester for a while. They come out, sweep up the bodies, and new people move in. I mean, that's you know, kind of mean, because, like, there's a lot of people that are going to get screwed by the Tories.
Yeah.
It's like,
maybe they'll be welcome in Scotland or Ireland.
Yeah. Move to Ireland, move to Scotland, if you can. So, at this point, we are now, well, we've been recording for nearly 90 minutes, and we should probably wrap up, because I'm kind of tired. It's 10 o'clock, and I need to edit this. So, this is going to be the last episode for the year, because the next three weekends fall... close to holidays, or
Cookie-geddon, Christmas, New Year's, and then we'll be back eventually on, I think we said the 9th?
I think the 9th, yeah. Yeah. So we're going to be signing off for a few weeks, but this happens every year. So you can always email us at southpawscast@gmail.com. Right now is a great time to pledge to Patreon because, well, you probably won't charge you anything because it's charged on a per-episode basis. So patreon.com/southpawscast. Fuzz and I do movie podcasts occasionally when we get together. Did you get that copy of Sunday School Musical so we can sing along with Ajax, Fuzz?
I think I was just a picture here.
I know.
Oh, okay.
What was this?
Oh, they made a musical based on... It was a Jesus version
of High School Musical called Sunday School Musical. It's like one of those things they sold at Walmart, you know, under the dove icon on it. Family safe or whatever. Maybe we'll get together and do some of that, Fuzz, or just... You don't. We don't have to always be producing content.
Yeah.
You know, we can just enjoy things. That's weird. Who does that anymore? So you can email us, southpawscast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter. Join our fan chat. It's popping. Generally a pretty chill spot. Bit of porn, bit of politics. It's all good. And I have been consistently putting it in the notes. You know, pop in, see if it's your flavor. And if not, you can always leave. You can find me on Twitter at SevenDrake. Getting occasionally spicy. You might hear me talking about the project I'm working on at the time. Other than that, it's the holiday season as we're getting into the last couple weeks of 2019. We're going to be in 2020 when you hear us next. Maybe a meteor will come and wipe us all out before then, but good things don't happen. So where can they find you, Fuzz?
Find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf, and go to fuzzwolf.com, and all my other links and stuff are there. You go to my FA, and you can look at the art I've commissioned. Go to forplanet.com for print books, baddogbooks.com for ebooks. All the new releases from MFF are available to order on For Planet, and I need to work on the ebook layouts for the new stuff for Bad Dog. So that'll be coming soon. Mary Loud's new book, Trigalactic Trek, is already up there, and I should have titles as an ebook on there within a week or so.
You can't find me on social media, though I am in the fan chat.
You're free.
Yep. You can come say hi.
And we're going to make... I wouldn't say we're going to make so many cookies. We're going to make things that are not cookies. Isn't that what you said? Like things that are not sweets for a cookie getting?
Yeah, because the whole point is you're making all the cookies.
Well, you can bring cookies. It's just I'm going to be drowning in them already. So I kindly request, you know, not sweet. I'm going to be making a bunch of chili. I'm apparently buying... what are the stupid things? The corn husk things from a coworker.
Tamales?
Tamales. I'm not Texan, goddammit. Okay. I'm buying a bunch of tamales from the Mexican aunt of a friend of a coworker. So he's had them many times. He loves them. He's Texan. Okay. I'm going to make up some charcuterie. Board with cheese and meats and all that fun nibbly stuff. And so much fucking cookies. Yeah, come Monday. I think it's, yeah, Monday or something like that. I need to clear off every single space I can make on my kitchen counters because the oranges come out of the syrup. And, yeah, I have to set up so many different drying racks to make sure that they're dry by cookie getting so I can dip them that day. But it means that every inch of my counters has sticky orange dripping all over it. So I'm pretty much limited by how much counter space I can do.
Yeah.
Because oranges, they make a hell of a mess when I go to pull them out of the syrup.
Yeah.
But so far, this batch looks good. I haven't had any failures. In past years, I've had cases where they've got moldy. And was it 2 years ago or was it last year? 2 years ago, I had some orange get into the batch where it was unripe, and this nasty, like, bitter flavor came out of a rind, got into the syrup, and from the syrup into every single orange in the batch. So the whole, like, the syrup tasted both sweet and incredibly bitter at the same time. It just had a really nasty aftertaste, and it destroyed the entire batch. Luckily, everything this time, I re-upped the sugar like 2 days ago, and everything is tasting good, so they should taste like marmalade shortly.
Nice.
All right, well, we're going to wrap this up because we're all very tired. So good night, good luck, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, and hopefully we'll talk to you guys next year.
We'll see you in 2020.
Hang in there.